Ukrainians watch with uncertainty now that President Joe Biden has dropped his bid for a second term in office.
Ukrainians still, they're not sure that this would be the final candidate because as we can see with Biden, everything could happen. So everyone is waiting for the end of August when official candidate will be announced.
Plus, two Russian courts have sentenced two American journalists to prison.
Journalism has been completely used as a bargaining chip by the Russian authorities. It just shows the complete lack of respect towards independent journalism by Russian authorities.
And later in the program, from basement to battlefield, Ukrainian startups are developing a low-cost robot army to fight Russian forces. Today is Monday, July 22nd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Gearing up to take on Donald Trump following President Joe Biden's decision not to seek re-election, Vice President Kamala Harris Monday praised the man who chose her as his running mate and who quickly after bowing out endorsed her to take his place as the Democratic candidate.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap. In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served two terms in office.
Beyond Biden's accomplishments, Harris praised his character.
His honesty, his integrity, his commitment to his faith and his family, his big heart, and his love, deep love of our country. And I am firsthand witness that every day our President Joe Biden fights for the American people, and we are deeply, deeply grateful for his service to our nation.
The European Union reacted Monday to President Biden's decision to drop out of the 2024 race for the White House. Belgian Foreign Minister Hajal Habib described Biden's withdrawal as courageous.
I wish all the best to maybe Kamala Harris, who will take the lead now for the Democrats. It's a woman. It's a strong woman, and I wish her all the best.
While leaders praised the work of President Biden, they were careful not to weigh in on choosing sides in the U.S. election. EU High Representative Josep Borrell.
The Americans have to decide who they want to be in the White House. And certainly, I'm sure it will be quite an important difference for the transatlantic relationship depending on who is there. But it is the U.S. citizens to decide.
The U.S. presidential election does have implications far beyond its borders, particularly when it comes to Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky said President Biden's unwavering support for his country has been critical in its fight against Russia. Still, President Joe Biden's withdrawal from the race has raised concerns among the people in Ukraine about continued U.S. support in its battle to survive against invading Russian forces. Vice President Harris has signaled that she would not deviate from Biden's staunch support for NATO and would continue backing Ukraine. Anna Chernikova joins us now from Kyiv for insights into how Ukrainians are reacting to the unpredictable twists and turns of the 2024 U.S. presidential election campaign.
It was, of course, definitely a surprise when it happened. But to be honest, for the past weeks, there were a lot of discussions around that Biden might withdraw from the election campaign and that there is no understanding who might replace him from the Democratic wing. On the other hand, Trump have already been nominated. Now there are a lot of discussions of who might replace him. And Ukrainians at this point are a little bit afraid that Trump might actually return to White House and this realization that he actually might return is now very clear because there are a lot of thoughts that he might be a stronger candidate than anyone who might be proposed by the Democratic wing. However, also a lot of Ukrainians now think that might be also okay that he's coming back because his unpredictability could be also in favor of Ukraine. So now the possibility of Trump being a president, what Ukraine can do. And actually, President Zelensky also had a conversation with Donald Trump over the weekend. So basically, Ukrainians at this point are very unclear what's going to happen and just hope that certain clarity will come soon.
President Biden has endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to take his place. If she were to become the nominee, which looks very likely at this point, she's getting overwhelming support so far from the Democratic Party. It would likely mean that she would continue with the Biden-Harris policy to support Ukraine. Biden, of course, has had unwavering support for Ukraine. So from your perspective there, Ukrainians still feel sort of unsure about what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, of course, everyone knows that Kamala Harris is the one who's been picked by Biden, and even she has very good reputation here in Kyiv, at least from what is discussed at this point. But again, Ukrainians still, you know, they're not sure that this would be the final candidate, because as we can see with Biden, everything could happen. So everyone is waiting for the end of August when official candidate will be announced.
What else can you tell us about the conversation that President Zelensky had with Donald Trump?
Well, in short, no much details, of course, been revealed, but President Zelensky said that he had quite a fruitful conversation with President Trump. And also previously, he said that it will be a very hard work to cooperate with Trump, but a Ukrainian nation is hardworking nation. This is what he said in his recent interview, and that Ukrainians are ready to work with his administration if he becomes president. What we know for sure that the main topic for conversation was how to end hostilities, how to get to a certain peace formula and peace agreement with Russia. And according to the comments after the conversation, Trump and Zelensky discussed that mainly. And now it's really also a lot of curiosity here in Ukraine about how Trump might get to put both Zelensky and Putin, or representative of Ukraine and representative of Russia, at the table for negotiations, because he's been talking about this a lot, that he will end the war, but he never mentioned how exactly he would do this and why he's so sure that he can end this war. So this was the main comments after the conversation between Trump and President Zelensky.
And now turning to another big story coming out of Ukraine is the assassination of a Ukrainian activist. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, actually, it was a very quite a shocking news coming in on Friday evening, right before the weekend, as a very famous Ukrainian activist who is also a former member of parliament, famous for her quite nationalistic positions, and very often majority of Ukrainians did not support some of her thoughts, but sometimes oppositely did support. She was very famous. She was a professor in the university and very famous Ukraine language defender and Ukraine language expert. Her name is Irina Farion, and she was assassinated next to her apartment building in Lviv. This was mainly shocking because for Ukrainian society, this is not normal that just in the middle of the day in a big city, someone is killed just next to someone's home. Also, President Zelensky, right after this event was confirmed and right after her death was confirmed, she was in the hospital at the time when she actually died. President Zelensky said that there are a couple of versions that police is investigating, and one of those is actually Russia has something to do with this and Russia is behind this, because she was very, as I said, famous for her pro-Ukrainian, sometimes even very nationalistic positions. The funeral was already held over the weekend, and still investigation is ongoing, and the killer has not been found. However, there are photos of person who might be the one who assassinated Ms. Farion, and definitely Ukrainian nation wants to know the name and wants this person to be put under the justice.
Anna Chernikova reporting to us from Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laurie.
Meanwhile, in a rare address Friday to the British cabinet, Ukrainian President Zelensky urged the UK's new government to help Ukrainian forces attack deeper inside Russia to stop the deadly missile strikes on his country.
For us, it's very important to be here. For Ukraine, especially this period, tough period for us during the war, for us, it's very important to maintain unity in Europe, because always this unity leads to strong decisions.
Some of Kyiv's allies are reluctant to let Ukraine use their weapons to strike Russian territory because of concerns that the West could be drawn into direct conflict with Russia. Zelensky's address was the first by a foreign leader in person since U.S. President Bill Clinton in 1997. Two closed-door trials, hundreds of miles apart, one outcome, prison. Russia on Friday convicted American journalist Evan Gershkovich of the Wall Street Journal and, on the same day, Alsu Kermisheva of VOA's sister network Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. For more, VOA's Liam Scott and Christina Caicedo-Smith have this report.
A guilty verdict and a 16-year prison term. A Russian court Friday handed down its sentence against Evan Gershkovich in what is seen widely as a politically motivated case. The espionage conviction against the American journalist is fiercely rejected by the Wall Street Journal reporter, his employer, and the U.S. government. The White House reiterates that Gershkovich is wrongfully detained and that, quote, journalism is not a crime. The U.S. State Department shares that view. Vedant Patel is the U.S. State Department deputy spokesperson.
This whole legal process is a sham for Evan. He is being wrongfully detained. He did nothing wrong. We have been clear about that from the onset.
Gershkovich's trial began on June 26th in Yekaterinburg, where the journalist was first detained in March 2023. He is the first American journalist Russia has convicted of espionage since the Cold War. Russia's embassy in Washington did not respond to VOA's request for comment, but its foreign minister says a prisoner swap is under discussion. Media watchdogs say the case reflects the country's dire record on press freedom. Karol Luchka covers Eastern Europe at the International Press Institute in Vienna.
This prison sentence just shows how journalism has been completely used as a bargaining chip by the Russian authorities. It just shows the complete lack of respect towards independent journalism by Russian authorities.
Gershkovich is one of two American journalists detained by Russia. Also, Kermisheva, who works for VOA's sister network Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, or RFERL, has been in custody since October. The journalist traveled to Russia to care for her mother. Since her arrest, she has been denied U.S. consular access and contact with her husband and daughters back in Prague. Kermisheva and her network deny the charges, which include violating military censorship laws and not registering as a foreign agent. Stephen Kappas is president of RFERL.
They're not shutting down Radio Free Europe by imprisoning Alsu. They're not stopping our feeds by imprisoning Alsu. What are they doing? They're taking two teenage girls and saying you can't have access to your mom.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield said this week the United States will not rest until Russia ceases its, quote, barbaric practice of holding human pawns. Russia is also issuing warrants and convictions in absentia to journalists over their Ukraine coverage. Among them, the Russian-born U.S. journalist Masha Gessen. Media groups say Russia has a drastic record for jailing journalists, with 22 detained as of late last year, 12 of whom are foreign nationals. For Liam Scott and Christina Caicedo-Smith, Steve Barragona, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Going into a third year of war, life without clean water has become routine for close to 500,000 residents of Ukraine's frontline city of Mykolaiv. At the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion, Kremlin forces destroyed the water distribution system. As Lesha Bakalets reports, the city has been looking for ways to restore it.
A tram carries drinking water instead of passengers in the southern frontline city of Mykolaiv. In the third year of war, this has become the normal way to transport water. A tram driver, Raisa Timchenko, says every resident knows about the tram and waits for it. The line stretches 10 meters long, each person with several empty barrels. Timchenko says that local people are already used to it, unfortunately. Both the old and the young draw that water constantly. Nearly 500,000 residents live in Mykolaiv, and there has been no drinking water here since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion. Boris Dudenko heads the local water authority. He says the Russians decided to use a new type of weapon, leaving a city of 500,000 people without water and by blowing up its water supply network. it was impossible to immediately repair the damage. All water collection systems were in the neighboring Kherson region occupied at the time. When Ukrainian forces partially took back part of the region from Russian control, the water supply was renewed, but not for long. The Russian army shelled it again from a distance. Duденко explains that they have recorded constant shelling from 3 to 2 dozen every day. He points to a water intake, saying it is located on the right bank of the Dnipro River, while the one on the left, only 900 meters away, is occupied by the Russians. The only option was to take water from the estuary on which the city stands. It is salty and suitable only for sewage needs, and it destroys pipes. Vitaly Lukov, the deputy mayor of Mykolaiv, says they had dozens of breaks. He says they had about as much water leaking from the pipes as they were pumping. Water distribution points were set up around the city to give out water from wells for drinking and cooking. Meanwhile, the tram carries water to places far away from these distribution points. Pavlina, a local resident, says she carried water for a year and then bought a wheelbarrow because her hands hurt. She says she got 18 liters today, which she says is enough for 1 week for her. Now, with the Russian invaders not far away, the city faces two challenges. The first is to replace damaged water pipes. The Danish government is assisting. Lukov says they are helping with new pipes, pumping equipment and utility equipment. He said that right now, with Danish help, the city is replacing the water supply system in the entire neighborhood. The other challenge is to build a water intake station. Officials have already identified a spot, but building the station will take time and a huge budget. The soonest they predict the city will have clean water on tap is next year. Lesia Bakalets, VOA News, Mykolaiv, Ukraine.
The deadly July 8th Russian missile attack that damaged Ukraine's largest children's hospital also destroyed its school for seriously ill patients trying to keep up with their studies. The School of Superheroes, launched at Kyiv's Okhmedyt Children's Hospital, is now offered at other children's hospitals in Ukraine. Anna Kostushenko has more from Kyiv.
The school for parents, teachers, and our students.
This is what's left after Russian missiles attacked the School of Superheroes at Okhmedyt Children's Hospital earlier this month. Halina Musienko, the head of the school, searches for any books or notebooks that survived the attack.
This was our main classroom. Please be very careful. Here are gifts we prepared for the kids.
At about 10:30 a.m. on July 8th, Russian missiles hit the classroom where seriously ill children usually studied.
There were no children in the classroom at the time because the siren started blaring at 9:52 a.m. and the teachers took all the kids to the shelter.
Six-year-old Nazarchik Cherchukan has been undergoing treatment at Okhmedyt for a brain tumor since August 2023. He had been attending preschool class at the School of Superheroes, hoping to get help with his writing. He and his mother, Olga Cherchukan, come to the hospital from their home in the Mykolaiv region regularly, so Nazarchik can receive chemo courses. They were at the hospital on July 4th, days before the attack.
We popped out to the pharmacy to get meds. We were supposed to be here, but instead we went to the apartment, and that's when we heard the explosion. I looked out of the window and I saw a lot of smoke.
School of Superheroes started in 2015 as a volunteering initiative, but in 2021, thanks to Ukraine's government, such educational centers were opened not only in Kyiv but several places across the country. Over 820 kids attended the School of Superheroes at Okhmedyt during the school year, school representatives say. But Russia's missile strike made it impossible to hold classes.
This building housed a small classroom for preschoolers, but at the moment the building is in a state of disrepair. There is a small library there, you saw it, but it is flooded. The books are all ruined.
The missile strike also badly damaged the hospital's oncology department. Olga Cherchukan is worried her son might not be able to finish his chemo courses.
I did not expect the hospital to be shelled. There are good doctors everywhere, but there was so much opportunity here. There was equipment, doctors could monitor our child's health, unlike in our village, when there was nothing.
According to the Kyiv City Military Administration, Russia's shelling of Ahmadiyya damaged or completely destroyed several of the hospital's departments, including Ukraine's only oncology and hematology laboratory. According to the assessment of the Ministry of Health, the two buildings of Ahmadiyya cannot be restored. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
Since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022, U.S. humanitarian organization Project Hope has been providing aid to Ukrainian health clinics and residents of the country's frontline towns and villages. Yaroslava Molchan has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Minibus transporting medical professionals working with the U.S. humanitarian organization Project Hope passes destroyed apartment complexes here in the Donetsk region of Ukraine. Doctors are headed to a clinic in Liman, one of the frontline towns where dozens of patients await their arrival. Retired resident Serhiy Mishin needs to see a cardiologist. He hasn't seen one since Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022. He says he's been sick since 2002. He had a heart attack. His health hasn't been great. His blood pressure is either too high or too low, so he wanted to see a doctor about that. Next door is the office of otolaryngologist Dr. Alexander Minayev and nurse Tatiana Tkachova. Every day, they see up to 30 patients here. The doctor treats a 12-year-old boy, Anton, who he says has not even breathed through his nose normally. He says he doesn't think the boy was ever really helped. Anton's mother, Ludmila, who didn't want to provide her last name for safety reasons, says locals cherish these doctor visits. For them, it's incredibly convenient. She says they stood in line a bit but didn't need to take a bus or anything. They used to have to go to Slavyansk and deal with public transportation, and then the lines at the clinic. Doctors from the city of Kramatorsk are among those who could come to the Donetsk region thanks to Project Hope program coordinator Yulia Dimnich. Originally from Donetsk, Dimnich moved to Kramatorsk in 2014, and after Russia invaded Ukraine, to Dnipro. When she comes to Kramatorsk for work, she stays in her old apartment next to Ria Pizza, a restaurant Russian forces shelled in June 2023. She says, "I'm just angry, you know? They just make us hate them more, but they're not going to scare us." Dimnich has worked with Project Hope since the start of Russia's invasion. After the war started, the charity opened an office in the Donetsk region. Project Hope is in the Donetsk region, Zaporizhia region, Dnipropetrovsk region, she says, and also regions like Nikopol, which are constantly under shelling. So she says they basically always work under fire. Andriy Shavela is a program assistant with Project Hope. She says the organization also helps by providing locals with fuel briquettes, hygiene kits, bottled water, and whatever else is needed. After the war ends, Dimnich hopes to return to Donetsk. Her older son was born there. Her younger one was born in Kramatorsk. So far, Project Hope has put together 46 mobile medical teams that help residents of remote and frontline villages and towns who cannot make it to a clinic. In the 2.5 years since the war started, its doctors have provided medical help to over 24,000 people in the Donetsk region alone. Overall, the organization has provided locals with medication and medical equipment worth over $12 million. For Yaroslava Movchan in the Donetsk region of Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And finally, today, from basement to battlefield, Ukrainian startups are developing a low-cost robot army to fight Russia. We hear more from Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas.
Struggling with manpower shortages, overwhelming odds, and uneven international support, Ukraine is looking for a strategic edge against Russia through technological innovation.
We are living in a future.
Andriy Denisenko heads a drone production company.
With drones, with machines, with the robots.
There are some 250 such defense startups across Ukraine, a developing ecosystem of hidden workshops and labs building a robot army in abandoned warehouses and factory basements.
This type of vehicle will be the game changer, and in the nearest future,
not just airborne, but on the ground, on caterpillar tracks.
Land drone will be made the main battlefield.
Denisenko says the aim is to overcome that shortage of soldiers
with the internet,
effectively creating a new way of war.
Made the dirty job without people.
I'm Ben Thomas.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.